A Singular Declaration of Intent by Coprime. Rating: General Audiences. Archive Warning: No archive warnings apply. Fandom: Daredevil TV. Relationship: Matt Murdock / Foggy Nelson. Additional tags: Point of view Foggy Nelson, point of view Matt Murdock, established relationship, sappiness, marriage proposal, short fight scene, introspection, forehead touching. Summary: On a late night, Foggy thinks of Matt and the future. Chapter 1. It was late, or early. Foggy had been sleeping peacefully, but then his sleep cycle shifted to a lighter stage, and his bladder had made its needs known to his groggy brain. "Shouldn't have had that last after-beer dinner," he thought, as he made his way to the bathroom. The electric light from Matt's billboard — the billboard was always Matt's, even if the apartment was theirs now — finished the job of waking him enough that Foggy knew he wouldn't be able to drop back to sleep easily. Matt was still out daredeviling and saving the city, and experience told Foggy he would be awake now until Matt came home. He could fall asleep once after Matt left on patrol, at the start of Matt's evening, because he knew any sleep he achieved would serve him if, when, Matt tumbled home injured and needing care. Sometimes that meant stitches and butterfly bandages, but just as often that care took the form of Foggy holding Matt as the adrenaline left his system and left him shaken as he processed everything he'd heard and done over the course of the night. Seeing as he was awake, Foggy made himself a cup of peppermint tea and settled onto the love seat Foggy had insisted they buy when Foggy moved into Matt's apartment. It was plush, with soft microfiber fabric for the upholstery, and just large enough for him and Matt to fit comfortably while snuggling. And, perhaps most importantly for Foggy's peace of mind, the love seat was not Matt's original leather couch, which had a long history of Matt lying on it while bloody and broken. Matt had insisted they keep his leather couch, and Foggy gave in because if they had to have a piece of furniture for Matt to lie on while injured, then the leather couch was as good as any other couch. And Matt's couch at least had the benefit of already being ruined for day-to-day casual use in Foggy's mind, no matter how many cleaning products were brought to bear on it. His mom's crocheted blanket, gifted to Matt years ago during the last Christmas before the pair of them had hunkered down to exist solely for studying in preparation of taking and passing the bar, had served as a cozy solace on many a night when someone was too wired to sleep, but their brain was too much soup to do anything more than sit and clumsily cogitate. Foggy grabbed it from its spot on the back of the love seat and situated himself so his back was to the windows and Matt's billboard. Neon blue changed to neon pink, changed to neon green, as the billboard cycled through its ads and lit up the living room. Foggy wondered where Matt was on his patrol. It was late, yes, but not so late that Matt's absence was remarkable yet. Foggy blew across his mug of tea and took a sip. Was Matt nearby, or had he traveled further afield, hearing something only he could hear and knowing it meant trouble? How much trouble had his boyfriend found tonight? Was it a night of muggings and petty crimes, or was someone once again trying to make inroads in Hell's Kitchen for more severe crimes? He wouldn't know until Matt returned. This was his life now. It would be his life for years, decades, if he stayed with Matt. Late nights and lost sleep and untold amounts of injuries and worrying, always worrying. Would tonight be the night? The night Matt got so badly beaten up the only way to keep him alive was to call 911? The night someone who knew Matt's secrets decided that Foggy was easy pickings and kidnapped him from their home to use as leverage against Matt? The final night, where Matt got in over his head and didn't make it home ever again? They'd talked about marriage before, both in the abstract and how it related to them. There were practical considerations: how it would affect their contingency plans if, or more like when, Matt's nighttime activities and civilian identity were linked together, as well as what sort of impact it would have on Matt's SSI. That's where Foggy's mind always went when talk of marriage came up, to the ins and outs of things they'd have to do because of the change in their relationship. Updating accounts to add each other, requesting Braille copies of their marriage record, notifying various insurances of the change in relationship, lists upon lists upon lists of people and companies they'd have to contact if one or both of them changed their name, starting with the government so they could get new IDs. Additionally, a new name would mean they'd need to get a new sign for their office, no longer Nelson and Murdoch. Matt was more of a romantic about the whole question. Any practical concerns were secondary, something to be dealt with after the decision was made, but not a factor in the decision itself. And, in this aspect of life, Matt was a bit more of a traditionalist than Foggy. He wanted to be married. He wanted that tie, wanted the world to know whom he'd chosen to share his life with. It had surprised Foggy the first time the topic had come up, and Matt had said he was eager to marry Foggy. After all, Foggy was the one who'd grown up with the example of what a happy, solid marriage looked like. His parents, Anna and Ed, had been together for nearly 30 of his 34 years, whereas Matt had been raised first by a single father and then by nuns. And, with his heightened hearing, Foggy imagined he'd been unwillingly eavesdropping on others' unhappy marriages for decades. A little cynicism about the institution could have been expected, possibly even a rejection of the idea entirely. But no, Maddie was an idealist. He wanted things to be better. He strove to make them better. He loved fiercely and deeply, and once he let someone into his heart, nothing could budge them from it. Was it any wonder, then, that he wanted to tie Foggy to him in all the ways available to him? Foggy turned to look out their apartment window, as if he'd be able to spot Matt from where he sat. Matt was ready for that next step together, and now, tonight, he found himself ready as well. Matt was out there somewhere, and maybe he was close enough to hear Foggy at this moment. "Matt," Foggy whispered, "I love you. Will you marry me?" There was no immediate rushing tumble of a Kevlar-clad vigilante down their rooftop access stairs, not that Foggy expected any differently. It would have been unlikely for Matt to have been so close by. Foggy whispered his proposal again, just in case, and waited several more minutes. He sipped his now lukewarm tea, but his only greeting was continued silence. That was okay. He'd chalk this proposal up as a test run, and try again another time. Chapter 2. Four blocks away from a certain sixth-floor Hell's Kitchen apartment that was actually quite nice if one didn't mind the billboard directly across from the windows, Daredevil was fighting a group of mob enforcers, trying to track down information about the latest criminal scheme. Punches flew, and Daredevil ducked to avoid a knife. One good roundhouse kick, and another man was down for the count, out of the fight. Only two more still standing. A whisper, at the edge of his hearing, "I love you. Will you marry me?" That couldn't be. Could it? Matt paused, straining his ears to figure out if it had really been Foggy talking. The fight had not paused. The taller of the two remaining thugs rushed him, tackling him to the ground. Matt twisted in his hold. There. Again. "Matt, I love you. Will you marry me?" Yes. That voice, those words, could only be Foggy. The shorter thug, not content to leave the fracas to his taller companion, had joined them and was kicking Daredevil with all his might. The kicks were ineffectual, Daredevil's armor absorbing most of their impact. Matt slammed his head back, breaking the nose of the man holding him. He yelled, pained, and loosened his hold. Matt surged free, rolling to the side, just in time for the shorter mobster to nail the taller in the groin with his next kick. Daredevil leapt to his feet. He needed to end this fight, now, so Matt could get home. The likelihood these low levels knew anything useful was vanishingly small, but he couldn't leave them free to harass the innocents of Hell's Kitchen. The taller opponent was out of the fight, clutching his nose and genitals. That made four down and one still standing. Daredevil grabbed the one remaining combatant, twisting him around and taking out his legs in one smooth move. He landed on his knees, Daredevil towering over him. Daredevil growled, "You're done for the night," and clocked him. A single precision hit to take him out, and then Daredevil was left standing alone amidst the wreckage of his violence. Matt hurried up the nearest fire escape, somersaulting from landing to landing until he reached the roof. He didn't know the context under which Foggy had said those eight words, whether he'd meant for Matt to hear them or had assumed Matt was too far away. There were limits to his hearing, and Foggy knew that. But Matt had spent years learning how to filter his hearing so he could survive life, which sounds were important and which he could ignore. His mind was primed, trained to bring to his attention that which his subconscious deemed significant. Foggy was supremely significant. But if Foggy was saying those words aloud, then he must have a reason. Matt wanted to believe it was because he meant them, that he was ready to tie his life to Matt's before God and everyone they knew, but he had to be realistic. Most likely, those words had been an experiment to Foggy, a taste of what it would sound like if he were to propose. Matt's heart flip-flopped like that all the way back to their apartment, one moment hoping Foggy had spoken true, the next chastising himself to keep his expectations realistic. His senses stretched the nearer he got to home, seeking out Foggy. Where was he in their apartment? Was he doing anything? Could Matt pick up any new smells from him? And the biggest one, how did his heart beat? The mint tea came to Matt first, the scent strong and piercing, and one Matt was long accustomed to as a greeting when he returned from patrols. Foggy's heartbeat came second. It echoed slightly in the large open space that was their living room. It was calm, sedate, not jittery with nerves or thumping hard in anticipation, like Matt had thought it would be if Foggy had truly been proposing to him. Matt's race home slowed. Disappointment warred against common sense, telling him he shouldn't be surprised. He landed on their roof and took a moment for himself. It was fine that Foggy wasn't ready for that step yet. Foggy hadn't been ready when Matt left him this evening, and Matt hadn't felt this dashed hope then. But 3 hours ago, Matt hadn't heard what Foggy's voice sounded like when he proposed. No, Matt wouldn't pressure Foggy. He wouldn't go barreling down those stairs. He wouldn't crush Foggy to him in exuberant joy for his having uttered those words. Foggy knew where Matt stood, and Matt had to trust that Foggy would join him when he was ready. Matt thumped down to the living room, taking in Foggy on the love seat and his blanket set beside him. The very shape he took up in Matt's mind was cozy and inviting. He could lay his head on Foggy and find welcome, find rest. And with Foggy in front of him, warm and real and waiting for Matt, Matt found he didn't mind that Foggy wasn't ready yet. He had Foggy in his life, and that was ultimately all he wanted. Foggy asked, How was patrol? Did you hear anything interesting? Foggy's heartbeat ticked up, and Matt cocked his head inquisitively. Foggy tightened his grip on his mug of tea. His skin squeaked, almost imperceptibly, against the ceramic. Was Foggy nervous about what Matt may have heard? Matt took off his helmet and ran a hand through his hair, loosening the sweat-soaked locks from how they'd gotten smushed down. If Foggy had really... Then Matt wanted to be as much himself for this moment as he could be. He tossed his helmet onto the cushions of the recuperation sofa, his gloves and billy clubs soon joining it. His boots he unlaced with alacrity and left beside the sofa. Removing the rest of his costume was a process, one he lacked the patience to go through right now. He knelt on the cushion beside Foggy and reached for Foggy, his own heart thumping nearly as loudly as Foggy's. Foggy discarded his mug on their coffee table and reached back, gripping Matt's hands. I heard, that is, I... Confronted with this precious moment, Matt found himself at a loss for words. He swallowed hard, trying to unstick his throat so he could tell Foggy he'd heard him. He knew. The answer was yes. But nothing was able to get past the lump that was his vocal cords currently. Foggy shifted and brought their foreheads together, so that the air he breathed out was the air Matt breathed in. I've done a lot of thinking tonight, Matt, about the future and what I want it to be like. And I want that future to be us, you and me, in all the ways we can be together. Matt squeezed his eyes shut to keep the tears welling in them from falling. I love you, Maddie. Will you marry me? Yes, Matt gasped. Yes, Foggy. Yes. The end. Thank you for listening.